Some political analysts are saying that Governor Scott Walker is heading into the most challenging re-election race of his 25 years in politics. Naturally, a lot at stake during Wednesday's State of the State address before lawmakers. We'll start our conversation right here for a week in review. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Matt Rothschild is executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Matt, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me on. It's nice to see you again.
Kevin Binversi is research director at Media Trackers. That's a conservative media group. Kevin, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, we're going to start with Governor Walker's eighth State of the State. He delivered it, as I said, on Wednesday. In addition to touting his achievements from his time in office, he laid out seven ideas for 2018 initiatives. We'll get to those in a moment. But first, Kevin, give us your assessment of the State of the State.
The speech or just in general?
The speech and your reaction to it.
I thought the speech was solid. I mean, it kind of went a little too long, in my opinion. I mean, when he was going with the laundry list, which is always cautious to do with any, be it State of the Union or State of the State, that, you know, do you want to actually, you know, tout the achievements that are going on, or do you just say, then we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. So he treaded into that area. Otherwise, I thought it was a solid speech. I mean, it definitely was a re-election State of the State's address. There's little doubt about that. But all in all, I mean, you know, touting most of the achievements that he has had in these last 8 years as governor was good, was smart. And, you know, and then there's always the thing, you know, and this is every politician has stolen this from Ronald Reagan since the 80s, you know, and then there's the personal stories about this program helped this guy, and then we're pointing this, and children on the stage, you know, you call them political human shields, which I believe was what some liberal critics were saying. But, you know, these are people who have been helped by various programs that he has inherited. But all in all, I mean, I would grade it probably about a solid B, not overall home run of a speech, but it was a solid speech.
Okay, Matt, so we had a solid B there from Kevin. How would you describe the State of the State address?
Well, I just think it's Walker in full panic mode here, you know, after the loss of the state Senate district 10 days ago. To Peggy Schachner, you know, he started to tweet like crazy, and this speech seemed to be an elongated tweet. I mean, first of all, he's kind of got delusions of grandeur. I mean, I just read over the speech again this morning, and he used the word historic about six times in the first four paragraphs. And I don't think there are any people, not many people, maybe Kevin and a few others, but not many people looking at Walker's term in office as historic. And then, you know, he said 10 times. I mean, he has a bad habit of repeating himself constantly, in case you didn't get the point the first time around. He said we're getting positive things done about 10 times. And I don't think that's a great bumper sticker either. And, you know, he's skating backwards so fast. You know, maybe he's trying out for the Winter Olympics in South Korea. I don't know. But he's going backwards so fast on so many things that he's done previously. And then he's claiming credit for stuff that, you know, he basically tried to destroy in earlier State of the Union speeches and in his actions, like funding for public schools. I mean, he's bragging and patting himself on the back for increasing funding to public schools when, you know, he decimated our public schools. I mean, he's like the pyromaniac who sets fires by night and then puts on his firefighter outfit in the morning and says he's a hero.
Well, let's pick apart some of this agenda, which includes some long-held Democratic ideas like moving youth inmates out of Lincoln Hills prison and guaranteeing those with pre-existing conditions can't be denied health insurance. Matt, did you like what you heard there, or are you not buying into these initiatives that the governor is trying to pitch?
No, I like those two things.
So, Kevin, what do you make of this? Do you find that the governor is moderating here with these initiatives?
No, I just find it hilarious that in the same 5 minutes, Matt goes from the governor's fighting for his political life to I like two ideas he's proposed, which means basically Walker is out politicizing the left by basically stealing the ideas so that the issues are off the table. So for 2018, Scott Walker is, whether guys like Matt and others want to say it, probably one of the smartest politicians the city has ever had in terms of just pure strategy wise. So no, I mean, you know, say what you want, but taking, outlawing, pre-existing conditions, you know, takes it off the table for 2018. So that's just smart politics in general. But in general, I think, you know, as a free market conservative, I'm a little worried about some of these ideas. How are we going to afford them? I mean, the other question, and this is the real $64,000 question, is the talk is if the legislative session goes past Easter, that's going to be a shock, and no one knows if that's actually going to happen or not.
So a very condensed time frame here. It is Week in Review. Matt Rothschild is with us, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, as well as Kevin Benversi, who is Research Director at Media Trackers. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you make of Governor Walker's State of the State address? How would you rate it? What letter grade would you give it? Do you support or oppose Governor Walker's proposed child tax credit? Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Governor Walker, also in the State of the State, proposed using a $137.5 million budget surplus toward a $122 million child tax credit, and he called for the legislature to act quickly.
Families from across the state will receive $100 for every child under 18 living at home. A couple hundred dollars more in the family budget could really make a difference, particularly when getting ready for the next school year.
Democrats called the plan a political move in an election year. Matt, is that how you see it?
Yeah, it's like a nice legal bribe. Get it to people right before the election. I think that's part of the problem. I mean, I agree with Kevin that Walker's a good politician. I mean, anyone who's been reelected twice and won the recall, I have never undersold Scott Walker as far as his skills in getting elected. But I think there's Walker fatigue now. I think people are looking at this guy and saying, wow, this guy is just such a politician. And the thing that we learned in the election in 2016 was that people are sick of politics as usual. People are sick of politicians as usual. And that's why we had, you know, Donald Trump doing so well, and, you know, a guy from Vermont who is a socialist who never combed his hair once in his life doing so well. And I think, you know, there's Walker fatigue across the state. Not that his arms are tired of carrying water for the Koch brothers. I don't think he'll ever tire of that. But I think people are tired of Walker, and that's going to hurt him. Trump's going to hurt him, and Foxconn's going to hurt him. He didn't talk about Foxconn that much in the speech.
He got to Foxconn about 32 or so minutes into the speech, but you're right. It was not the crown jewel of accomplishments. Kevin, getting back to this child credit, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said it'll take some time to see if his caucus supports the plan. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said he's very confident the tax credit would pass. Should lawmakers give it a thumbs up or thumbs down? You said you're concerned about spending.
Well, yeah, I mean, admittedly, if in a perfect world, if I was czar of Wisconsin, I would have thrown all the surplus into the rainy day fund. But that's just me being more fiscally conservative on spending issues. But I think politically, yeah, $100 to people with children under the age of 18 is a win, you know, politically. So obviously that's why you have both Walker and Voss pushing for it. I can understand the skepticism from the state Senate. If they do it, you know, can they afford it? Especially with some of the other things that they just put through in the state budget. I think the question going forward with this tax credit is, again, going back to, will there be enough time in what is believed to be a very truncated legislative session for a lot of these things that the governor wants to get done? I mean, he wants the Lincoln Hills thing accelerated. He wants this tax credit. He wants, I mean, what, four or five different items that he said in the state of state that he wants done. And then there's all the various bills that the legislature itself wants done. Yeah, these guys can work at lightning speed when they want to, but, you know, just the reality of it is, you know, this legislative session, as I said, if it goes past Easter, that's going to shock me.
Well, on the subject of health care in the governor's initiatives, he said that since Washington has failed to act, it's time for Wisconsin to take a lead. So he's proposing to make it illegal for people with pre-existing conditions to lose their health insurance, and to get he aims to get a permanent waiver for senior care, the program that helps seniors with prescription drug costs. He's also asking for a federal waiver to offer reinsurance, which affects the 200,000 people in Wisconsin who buy the coverage on the Obamacare exchange. It's basically to, it sets up a pool of money for the government to cover the costs of insurers' most expensive cases. Speaker Voss says he's open to the plan. Matt, what do you make of Governor Walker's rollout of these health care initiatives?
Well, just first of all, it's a good idea. The problem of not ensuring people that they, when they have pre-existing conditions or when their loved ones have pre-existing conditions, is the most ghastly problem with the U.S. healthcare system right now. And the amazing thing about Walker is this is a complete 180, because when Trump suggested that it would be possible for states to opt out of Obamacare's guarantee of coverage for pre-existing conditions, there we had Scott Walker, the first politician to jump aboard and saying, yeah, maybe we won't guarantee coverage for pre-existing conditions in Wisconsin. So this is a complete 180. And it, again, it underscores the fact that this guy will do anything, say anything to get reelected. But on the merits of it, it's very important to cover people with pre-existing conditions.
Kevin, Democratic State Senator John Erpenbach said he expects his party to largely support the measures. So no real surprise there. And the governor is figuring that he's perhaps been on the wrong side of the issue in listening sessions around the state. What do these measures, are these the right things to do at the right time?
I think it's, given what's happened with kind of the federal catastrophe of Obamacare, it's the state's going to have to start doing something eventually. To me, I kind of see this as kind of a reestablishment of a high-risk pool. Maybe that's what eventually may happen. That's kind of my look at things in a policy aspect. As for the senior, is it senior care, which is what's the one that you wanted the federal waiver for? I'm
just trying senior to care.
Remember?
Yes.
I've long thought, and I've talked this to friends of mine who work out in Washington, D.C., and who work for the various congressional delegations. I've never understood, when they were making Medicare Part D, why they didn't just copy Wisconsin's program in the first place and federalize it. It's Wisconsin actually, under Tommy Thompson and everybody else before that, did a great job creating senior care. My parents are on senior care. They love it. They've never had any issues with it. And because the federal bureaucracy, and they like to be the top dog and everything, has always been, you know, messing around with the state with that waiver. And but we've gotten 3 or 4 extensions of this waiver. So I say, yeah, it's time to finally do, as the governor said, and, you know, permatize that waiver. You know, if that can't get done when you have a Wisconsinite as the House Speaker, then, you know, God help them all.
Well, Matt, do you agree with Erpenbach that Walker's perhaps been doing some polling in hopes of securing a reelection?
Yeah, I just think what we've seen from Scott Walker here over the last 2 weeks is just a man who is scared for his life and running for his life. And I think he knows that on health care, any person who's taken a poll on health care in the last 10 years knows that people, not only in Wisconsin but across the country, want to make sure that there's a guarantee for those of us who have pre-existing conditions or have kids with pre-existing conditions. And so Scott Walker, you know, is not an idiot when it comes to, you know, what works politically. And so he's jumped aboard this one a little bit late, but he's on board.
Well, John in Eau Claire called in to say that instead of giving Wisconsin families $100 in child credits, they ought to use the money to repair their vehicles after driving over all of the pothole-filled roads. So kind of a tongue-in-cheek comment there, but what about the point that we need to stop neglecting transportation? We're digging into Governor Walker's State of the State speech. It was his 8th one in office. He touched on some long-held Democratic priorities, including guaranteeing insurance coverage coverage for people with pre-existing conditions. He also appealed to conservatives with further toughening of state welfare program requirements. What do you make of this speech? How about his plans for reinsurance, pre-existing conditions, and senior care? Join in Week in Review. We have Matt Rothschild, the executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, with us, and Kevin Binversi, the research director with Media Trackers. Back in a moment for more conversation here on the Ideas Network. Two commissions in Wisconsin have a unique role in state government. On Tuesday, State Senate Republicans voted to reject confirmation of the state's top ethics and elections officials. Republican lawmakers said that's equivalent to a pink slip. Were Republicans right to reject the administrators of the Ethics and Elections Commissions? That's a question we'll be exploring later this hour from two different political perspectives on this Week in Review. You can join in that question at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Kevin Binversi is research director with Media Trackers, a conservative media group, and Matt Rothschild is with us, executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Let's bring in John now about the state of the state. John joins us from Burlington. John, go ahead.
Good morning. I just I had a question. What do you think of the idea that the Foxconn, they awarded the general contract to an operation out of Rhode Island? I don't know why they couldn't find someone in Wisconsin. I'm kind of curious what that's all about.
Kevin, we can start with you on that nuance about Foxconn.
Who Foxconn chooses for their general contractor is up to Foxconn. I'm assuming they went with the standard bidding process. So the question then comes is, what were the offers being made by the Wisconsin firms? Yeah, it would have been nice if they picked someone locally, but you know, if everyone's complaining about the billions of dollars state taxpayers are paying for this thing, I would like at first and foremost, if everyone's complaining about the cost, well, if these guys got the best offer for their money, who, what's it going to be? Or is it just one of these things where Democrats are going to complain about everything with this deal until, they accomplish whatever they want to accomplish politically with it?
Matt, Foxconn came up about 32 or so minutes into the governor's speech on Wednesday. He made reference to contractors working out of Black River Falls, I believe, who had started work as far as construction plans are concerned on the billions of dollars that the campus will cost. What do you make of John's concern that they found a contractor in Rhode Island?
Yeah, it's interesting. Walker didn't mention the Rhode Island company, did he? Who's going to benefit from Foxconn? I think that's the underlying question. The profits are going to go to Rhode Island. The profits are going to go to Taiwan. And if you're not living in Racine or Kenosha counties, if you're anywhere else in Wisconsin, are you really going to benefit from this thing? That's why Walker buried the name Foxconn, so deep into his speech.
Let's go to Ruth, who joins us in Eau Claire. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, good morning. Basically, and I hear Governor Walker say what he's saying, and particularly the things around health care, money back to families. I just don't trust him. He's in an election year. He's saying the kinds of things that people he believes want to hear, but that certainly this hasn't been a focus for him, and all of a sudden now he's having these, social concerns, because he knows that's what people want, but that's not what he's going to deliver ultimately. The other point is, if you're talking about families having $100 so they can buy backpacks and winter coats, you've got families in dire need. If that's what you think they need to buy with this money, they're really struggling if that's the case, and that's not good. The other thing is, please stop calling it Obamacare. The Republicans do this all the time. It is now Trump Care. And whatever we're getting, the increases of costs, could be shorn up, but they're not being shorn up. People are being hit hard.
Ruth, thanks for the call. And Ruth is concerned about empty promises, Kevin, that the governor laid out in his initiatives. What do you make of that?
Well, sounds to me like Ruth probably never voted for Scott Walker before in her life. Honestly, I mean, it was, as I said in the beginning, this was a re-election state address. I mean, it was, you know, say what you want, you know, this speech, you know, in terms of its tone and whatever, was about making sure Wisconsin remembered the achievements he had, and this is the whole things he hopes to get done in the future, if given another 4 years. So, I mean, say what you want about it, it's a political speech. That's what state of the state addresses are. As for her concerns about healthcare has been imploding for decades, at least according to every liberal I've ever talked to about the issue. But to then suddenly say now it's all the other Republicans' fault is kind of laughable when the time bomb was specifically placed in 2010 by President Obama and Democrats in Congress. So this whole thing about, oh, my God, the costs. Well, things were bad. It was made worse. And nobody seems to have any sort of legitimate idea of how the heck to actually get it done beyond, you know, blowing up Obamacare. And I'm going to keep calling it because even Obama called it Obamacare. Or going, you know, single payer, which I'm sure Matt would love, which I would hate every second of.
Matt, quick follow-up before we move on.
Yeah, well, I just want to honor Ruth's call, especially the comment that she was making about Walker's trust problem. I mean, here is a guy who said he wasn't interested in running for president. He just wanted to be governor of Wisconsin, and all along he was plotting his presidential effort, which was hapless, to say the least. And then he was the same guy who said, you know, right to work, don't even bring up right to work. It's never going to land on my desk. And the second it landed on his desk, he got out his pen and signed the sucker. So there are a lot of examples of Walker being untrustworthy, and I think Ruth put her finger on it.
Well, after calling for a special session of the legislature to take up several welfare reform proposals, including creating a mandatory photo ID for food stamp recipients, increasing work requirements, and drug testing for public assistance, the governor made the case again during his State of the State address. Let's listen.
Now, some, maybe even in this Capitol, will complain that our reforms are about making it harder to get government assistance. The truth is, our reforms are about making it easier to get a job.
Well, Kevin, Democratic State Senator Dave Hansen of Green Bay said the welfare push districts from other issues like Foxconn and issues at the federal level. What do you think about this welfare reform package?
I actually laughed when I read Dave Hansen's comment because it sounded, I mean, it's like, oh my God, no, we can't talk about this issue or deal with it because we want to talk about this issue when we're campaigning in the fall, because heaven forbid we actually deal with stuff locally when we actually want to, you know, bang up on Donald Trump and congressional Republicans on the campaign trail this fall. Thanks, Dave, you're awesome. But no, I mean, this is just an extension of what Wisconsin's done already in welfare reform, and I think it's common sense, especially in the case of trying to prove who people are and trying to ensure that, you know, we're giving hand ups, not handouts.
Matt, your reaction to the reform package?
I don't call it welfare reform. I've hated the so-called welfare reform thing since Bill Clinton started it many years ago and Ronald Reagan campaigned against it. It's an easy political ploy to try to scapegoat people who are poor. And this idea, Walker repeated again, you know, that people are lying around in a hammock, which is just an absurdity. And, you know, he wants drug testing for people to get their food stamps. And when is he going to start drug testing the CEOs who get all those Weedick loans? That's what I want to know.
Well, the governor re-outlined his plans for the future of Lincoln Hills and the state's juvenile correction system. He wants to move the inmates out of Lincoln Hills and into regional facilities around the state, and then in turn make Lincoln Hills a medium security adult prison. He originally wanted these changes to happen after 2019, but in Wednesday's speech called on lawmakers to act by the end of this session, which is scheduled to end pretty quickly. Kevin, what should the state do about its juvenile offenders, and can movement happen this session on Lincoln Hills?
Well, I think, again, going back to can movement happen, it all depends on what that legislature plans on doing in this month and a half before
reportedly they, gavel the end of it, before Easter again. So I think the Walker plan is solid. I mean, the irony of this, of course, is you have Democrats who are complaining about Lincoln Hills for months and months and months. Then Walker finally says, here's what we're going to do, and this is the plan, because you can't just drop something, on a hill. So they were taking months. I actually spoke with Deputy Chief of Staff for Walker about what was going on with Lincoln Hills, and they said, we were formulating a plan for months while Democrats were just, air bombing press releases and from the sidelines. So when it comes to Lincoln Hills, essentially you have a bipartisan plan, but the question is, will there be bipartisan agreement to get it done? And I think, going with the regional stuff makes sense, because then you can keep these juvenile offenders close to home. Their families can come and visit them, try to, do one-on-one rehabilitation, and things like that. But also the reality with Lincoln Hills is these are some of the worst of the worst, and Lord knows if they even can be rehabilitated with some of the things you've heard about what happened at that place. But again, the real reality is going to be, will the legislature in this month and a half, 2 month session that's supposed to be rumored to be happening, get the job done?
Well, Matt, can you see the bipartisan support, the call out to Goyke during the State of the State address? You heard a booming clapping. Can this get done?
Well, I really think so. I mean, the idea Kevin mentioned that, some of these juveniles are worst of the worst and may not be able to be rehabilitated. I totally disagree with him. To say that any juvenile is beyond redemption is something I don't think most people would sign on to. Walker is really late to the dance on this sucker. I mean, we have Kevin saying, well, the Walker people were formulating plans for months on this. For months, Evan Goyke had plans on the table for years on this thing, and finally Walker's coming around to adopting Evan Goyke's plan. So, I think it can pass. I think it should pass. It's a good plan. Evan Goyke's been way ahead on this. It's nice to see Walker come around finally.
Well, before we finish up with State of the State, let's bring in Kit, who joins us from Mount Horeb, with her reaction. Kit, go ahead.
Yes. I just turned on the radio only a couple of minutes ago, so I'm not sure if I'm right on the subject here, but you had a guest, Peter Edelman, who was on about a month and a half ago, and his book is called Not a Crime to Be Poor. And I see these regulations that Walker's putting in and all this talk about super criminals and all the rest. It's just a lot of nonsense to squeeze the poor with more regulations. This business of having to have a job in order to get food stamps, on its face it sounds sensible, but in reality what it could amount to is that when a person all of a sudden loses his job and he's still using food stamps, they'll catch him for fraud, give him a felony label, and fine him. And it's one more method to try to get money out of the poor.
Kevin, do you see these proposals as a way for people to be lifted up out of poverty? As the governor has said before, he doesn't want a hammock, he wants the trampoline. But do you see that these initiatives would help lead people to meaningful work, meaningful jobs?
Yeah, I mean, especially if you add it with job training programs that are out there. I mean, you mentioned, the job centers that are littered across the state. So, I mean, there are ways that you can help people who are, looking for work and all this other stuff. So, I mean, the clutching of pearls from many liberals when even the phrase welfare reform comes, it's always amazed me, because, I mean, do you want people to be subservient, slaves to, a program of the state, or do you want them to be productive people of society? That's the question that's always been there, and that's why, you've had this, kind of, 20-25 year going all the way back to the W-2 and Tommy Thompson issue of people going, are we creating programs where people basically live off, are become indentured servants to the state where they just collect a check, or do you want them to actually, be getting a real paycheck with a real job, and so on and so forth?
Matt, your reaction there, and anything that was left out, you see, of the State of the State?
Well, I think Kit has a good point. And let's remember, drug testing of people to get their food stamps. I mean, a lot of those people have kids. And who's going to be penalized if the parent flunks the drug test? The kids are. Are we really going to be that callous in Wisconsin?
Well, the state Senate voted 18 to 13 to reject the confirmation of Elections Commission Administrator Michael Haas and Ethics Commission Administrator Brian Bell this week. Senate Republicans, led by Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, said they could no longer trust the two because of their work on the now disbanded Government Accountability Board, which investigated Governor Walker and other Republicans. Kevin, was this the right move for Senate Republicans to make?
Yes. I mean, because these were people who never should have been appointed in the first place when they disbanded the GAB and reestablished the Ethics and Elections Board. I don't, you know, you could say, well, they're the only people who will qualify for the job. I kind of find that, you know, a little hard to believe. These are folks who, you know, were, you know, always, you know, who are very questionable, especially with the John Doe and all the other things and what was going on the GAB. And, you know, we still don't know exactly, you know, what may or may not have been happening internally inside that when it comes to those investigations and whether or not these just became, both became witch hunts. And, you know, is this just a question of, oh, these guys need to run elections? It's not really the issue here. It's a question of, was there proper oversight of what was going on versus, you know, just getting, you know, being honest servants to the state.
Well, Elections Board Chairman Mark Thompson will be on our program as part of Monday's State Capitol Report after 7:30. And he said Michael Haas has done an impeccable job and deserves to stay in his role. Despite his Senate rejection, Haas's panel voted 4-2 to keep him in the job through April 30th. And Senator Fitzgerald said he had heard third hand that Bell may not even seek reappointment to his job on the Ethics Commission. So, Matt, what is your read on all of this, on how this process is playing out?
This is one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen in Wisconsin, and I've been here more than 35 years. This is Scott Fitzgerald acting like a playground bully and a wannabe mobster. He wants to rub out and destroy anyone who's associated with anybody who dared stand up to Walker and the people who are under investigation by the old Government Accountability Board and the John Doe prosecutor. And this is just a witch hunt and a vendetta against these two public servants who... And I don't know where Kevin gets off saying they were very questionable. The bipartisan commissioners of both the Ethics Commission and Elections Commission gave these guys unanimous approval of the role that they were doing and commended them for their performance in office. And I was there on the Senate in the Senate gallery on Tuesday when they took this vote. And I heard Senator Fred Risser get up and say, this is a first-rate hatchet job, and point his finger at Fitzgerald and say, you know, this isn't fair, and I'm embarrassed at this body. And the senators on the Democratic side were asking Fitzgerald, what does he have against these guys? And amazingly, this is what Senator Fitzgerald said. Can I nail down exactly what they did? I have no idea. Well, he's got no idea what they did wrong, and yet he fires them? I mean, this is, you know, forget the trial. We're going straight to the execution. Fitzgerald won't even give these guys a hearing.
Let's pause here. Let's bring in Nate in Milwaukee. Nate, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. And I would say that perhaps one of the things Walker should have included in his state of the state is that with the dismantling of the GAB, which was basically an independent referee, he was making corruption easier to do, and by carrying out these acts against people that worked for it, he was furthering that message. I'll point out that basically what these people were guilty of doing were in trying to enforce the laws, and that if somebody wanted to, they could actually look back at both the earlier John Doe, which the GAB wasn't part of, in this, and see that the laws were actually being enforced. Also, the state Senate didn't really allow for much in public commentary, and I think that was because the excuses they were using to get rid of these people would have been called out.
Nate, thanks for the call. Let's get Kevin here to respond. Kevin, go ahead.
Well, the idea that the GAB was an innocent party in the John Doe's kind of seems laughable to me, who's been, you know, covering or and commenting on their actions in the whatever. I mean, why do you keep files on a separate external hard drive labeled Oppo Research. Why do you do all these other things that clearly are outside your domain? Why are you doing all these things that, you know, either essentially only are targeting one side of the aisle, but nowhere on the other side of the aisle? The GAB, and I know I'm going to, you know, Matt's going to scream because that's what the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign does whenever anyone attacks the GAB. The GAB was almost kind of, in my opinion, a kind of throwaway, you know, organization created to pretty much shut Mike Ellis up, who wanted for years and years and years because he was never a fan of the old system. Now the old system's back, and, you know, say what you want about it, but, you know, I would love to see us do something different, but the reality is, you know, the GAB was not this perfect system everyone claimed it to be. And I don't think there is a perfect system in running elections and whatnot in Wisconsin.
Before we move on, and let's give Joan in Eau Claire the last word on this. Joan, go ahead.
Good morning. Scott Walker broke Wisconsin campaign finance law by openly coordinating with dark money donors in his 2010 campaign. Walker had a secret email server in his Milwaukee County Executive Office closet. The Government Accountability Board opened an investigation into Walker's campaign violations. This is Scott Walker's revenge. Now, in 2018, Walker was caught back then, and now this is his revenge. This is a travesty against clean government in Wisconsin at the hands of Scott Walker and his buddy Scott Fitzgerald. And by the way, the Government Accountability Board was known as a model for clean government and accountability across our country. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
And we are going to turn right there our discussion on Week in Review. Kevin Benversi is Research Director with Media Trackers, a conservative media group. Matt Rothschild with us as well, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. You can weigh in on the week's developments. You are at the table at 800-642-1234. What do you think of President Trump's proposal to offer Dreamers citizenship in exchange for $25 billion to build a border wall? Last night, the New York Times broke a story that indicates President Trump ordered the firing of Special Counsel Robert Mueller last June. What is your reaction to this? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. Yesterday from the New York Times that President Trump ordered the firing last June of Robert Mueller, the special counsel overseeing the Russia investigation. The Times was quoting from four unnamed sources. The president has been calling it fake news. We'll explore this and other national matters and we can review. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email us at WPR.org. What do you think of President Trump's proposal to offer Dreamers citizenship in exchange for building a border wall? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Matt Rothschild is with us, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, and Kevin Benversi is Research Director with Media Trackers. Well, let's turn now to the national story that we've been hearing a lot this morning. We heard that the president reported last night in the New York Times that president was ordering the firing of Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller in June, but ultimately backed down after his White House counsel threatened to quit rather than carry out the president's order. That's been chatter now for months about the president wanting to fire the special prosecutor. Matt, how much do you make of this story, and what does this change in the investigation?
Well, it's not shocking because, after all, the reason President Trump was so mad at Attorney General Sessions is because he allowed for the appointment of a special prosecutor. And, you know, Trump is a mercurial person who's got a bad temper and a bad personality, ill fit for the White House. So the fact that he went off and said we should fire this guy doesn't surprise me. I think Trump's in a world of hurt here. And there is mounting evidence, I think, that Robert Mueller is putting together that, you know, Trump either obstructed justice or he and or his staff were colluding with the Russians. And what's he going to do about it? One way is to fire Mueller. Another way is to pardon everybody under the sun, including his sons and himself. And maybe that stuff is going to play out down the road. We don't know. But this is one example of how desperate I think the president is getting.
Kevin, would there be a chain reaction, a constitutional crisis, if you will, if Mueller were to be fired?
Yes, I believe it would. I mean, I agree with Matt in the sense that the idea that he wanted to fire him almost a year ago doesn't shock pretty much anybody who's watched this White House for the better part of a year. I mean, Trump is, you know, he's a product of what he is. So the fact that he wanted to fire somebody who he thought would, you know, I don't know if you'd say, oh, my, like, look into his dirt and all this other stuff, but in the sense thought, you know, why am I being investigated for this, this, and this? You know, let's end this farce that's in his mind. You know, so, and I think, yeah, I mean, the idea that, you know, he was at least walked off the ledge, according to the New York Times, and White House hasn't confirmed anything. I don't think you're ever going to get a confirmation from the White House on this story. You know, doesn't seem that out of line that, you know, he was walked off the ledge by the White House counsel. But I mean, as for your question about constitutional crisis, I mean, excuse me. you certainly have an issue, especially with, you know, I wouldn't go to the far of saying it would be like Saturday Night Massacre style with Nixon, but, you know, the question becomes, you know, what you do if, you know, the president's saying, I don't want to be investigated, and literally firing everybody who's trying to investigate him.
So President Trump said this week he's looking forward to being questioned under oath regarding any collusion with Russia and possible obstruction in the firing of FBI Director James Comey. He said the questioning could happen in the next several weeks and reaffirmed there's no collusion whatsoever. Matt, what do you expect to come out of this investigation?
Well, first of all, I don't think Trump is going to meet with Mueller. I think Trump, if he has any ear open to any lawyer under the sun, he's going to say, I shouldn't do it, because their lawyers are going to say, you are going to get yourself into a terrible trap here by speaking to Robert Mueller. First of all, Donald Trump can't tell the truth to save his life, and he'd need to tell the truth to save his life here. Otherwise, he'll be caught lying to an FBI investigator, and that's a felony. So I think he's in real trouble if he opens his mouth there. So I don't think that's going to happen. Ultimately, I do think there's going to be a constitutional crisis here. Lindsey Graham warned us months ago that if he fired Robert Mueller, there'd be a constitutional crisis. If he pardons, you know, Jared and his son, or pardons himself, there's going to be a constitutional crisis. And that's why I'm really worried about our democracy right now in America. I think we were told in seventh grade and in high school social studies classes that we have this great system of checks and balances. I'm not sure it's that great a system. And ultimately, this is a huge test of it.
Well, since our last week in review, the federal government shut down. It opened back up on Monday. Congress and the president agreed to fund the government through February 8th. We also had the extension of CHIP funding. And then there is DACA and immigration, which were at the center of negotiations ahead of the shutdown. Let's talk about that matter. And let's first go to our callers on this. Let's go to David in Wisconsin Dells. David, go ahead.
Yes, yeah, so I was going to talk to you about the wall. $25 billion, is that correctly the amount of money that they want for it?
In exchange for an immigration deal, yes.
Yeah, $25 billion? Okay, I'm going to ask the question. Didn't Mr. Trump say that Mexico was going to pay for it and we weren't going to pay for it, right?
So, David, I want to know, what question are you asking? What point are you trying to make really quickly?
The question I'm asking is, who's going to be stuck with the bill?
All right, Kevin, go ahead with this.
Well, I've always been of the opinion the wall is never going to happen for a number of reasons, mostly because it's just impractical, and it comes off more as a talking point than anything to the kind of fervent restrictionist immigration base that, you know, Trump is appealing to. I mean, I was never Trump during the campaign. I'm still of the Trump skeptic world a year into his presidency. So, but I mean, the whole idea that Mexico is going to pay for it, I logistically, even that never made any sense to me, because how do you get them to pay for it? You know, tariffs? Well, consumers pay tariffs. You know, you can't find them. You can't, you know, send them a check. You can't, you know, or a bill. You can't, you know. So it's always been, to me, more of a talking point and a negotiation point for maybe enhanced border security, maybe better things down the line, you know, for things that will eventually happen in an immigration debate. The problem, of course, as we saw with this the most recent government shutdown, is the question with Democrats is, do they want actually to solve the problem, or do they just want the issue to campaign on? I tend to be of the latter.
Matt, before we go to you on this, let's go to Joe in Lac des Flambeaux. Joe, go ahead.
Hello. I just wonder how, you know, you would explain to millions of immigrants that come here legally and, you know, fill out their files and wait in line, that they should have jumped the fence or dug a tunnel to get here, you know, instead of wasting their time in line and doing things legally. I think illegal means just what it means, illegal. And laws weren't created to pick and choose from which to enforce.
Joe, thanks for the comments. Matt, illegal means illegal.
Well, first of all, let me just say, you know, I agree with Kevin on the wall that it's impractical. I agree with David that, you know, Trump said Mexico's going to pay for it. Mexico's not. The problem with what Joe said is, what about the kids? What about the kids who are 1 year old or 2 years old or 6 months old or 4 years old or 5 years old who came to this country with their parents who didn't have proper documentation? Are we going to throw those kids out of this country? That's the whole debate over the Dreamers. And I think this issue is a huge loser for the Republicans if they are going to start throwing these kids back who had no responsibility whatsoever, weren't even cognizant of what the laws were when their parents brought them over, and who've lived there essentially their whole conscious life. That isn't America. That isn't the Statue of Liberty. That isn't what we represent.
Well, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said the president's comments signaled a major breakthrough, the White House outlining a bill that they expected to promote next week. Should lawmakers take that deal coming out of the White House? Kevin, you first.
Well, again, I mean, the problem with immigration, and, you know, and this is a legitimate debate that's going on, and you can even see it among Democrats, you know, and Republicans, is you have both parties that are split on how they want to handle this issue. You have Republicans who have some very, very hardliners like the Stephen Kings and of the world, who are like, you know, no immigration, who want to cut down even on the number of legal immigrants that are coming in. Versus the, you know, what you call Chamber of Commerce types, Wall Street Journal editorials, who are very kind of open borders, but want to streamline the process and make it more modern. We haven't updated our immigration rules in years. While the Democrats, again, goes with the fact you have, you know, people who, as Matt says, want to deal with this issue, and then there are others who basically just want the issue, because everyone talks about, well, you know, this is the Republicans fighting this. Well, Democrats controlled the government, last I checked, from 2009 through 2011. Nobody passed the Dream Act, though it was on the table. Nothing like that. They had the 60 votes in the Senate, so they could have pushed it through there past the filibuster. Never happened, which again brings up the point. Are we just kind of debating ourselves in circles on this issue, which I think we are, or does anyone actually want to solve it? And Lord knows if we're going to get an answer to that one.
Oh, debating ourselves in circles. Week in Review is going to wrap up on that point. Matt and Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. Matt Rothschild is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, and Kevin Benversi is Research Director with Media Trackers, a conservative media group. This Week in Review was produced by Bill Martins. We had technical direction from Brittany Williams. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is the Ideas Network. Have a great weekend. Thanks so much for listening to us.